So good morning, everyone. I'm delighted today to bring Bridie Kennedy-Hopewate to the Overseas Athlete Podcast. Bridie, thank you very much for finally being able to catch up with me. It's been a long time coming, so I'm looking forward to it.
It definitely has been, Chris. I'm so grateful to be here. I'm excited to talk.
No, me too. So you've got a really cool overseas athlete story. I can imagine there's a lot of things that people can learn from all the countries you've been to and all the experiences you've had. So I'll let you kick it off just by giving us a bit of a background into who you are, where you grew up and how you became an overseas athlete.
Yeah, so I was born and raised in Brisbane, Queensland, Australia, the Sunshine State. Started playing basketball when I was 10 years old. I was actually a track and field athlete before that. Was a diehard track and field athlete. Absolutely loved it. And then my track coach's husband was actually from America and was like, hey, you want to come try out basketball? And I was like, basketball, like, I don't know about that. Like, it's a different moment, you know, like an individual sport being tracked to going to a team sport like basketball. I was like, I don't know. And so I was just like, okay, I'll go have a crack at it. And I absolutely fell in love with basketball. It was just the team environment, the energy. It's just so different, like being in a team, you know, type environment, like I said, compared to just such an individualized environment being track and field. And my mom was just like, look, there's only one of me. You need to pick one sport. I was like, no way. So I picked basketball. So I had only been playing basketball for like 3 months. And my mom was like, you've got to make a decision because this is a lot doing track and field. And then my mom was looking after myself and my little sister. So, you know, I had to make that decision. And yeah, never regretted it. Basketball has definitely, you know, brought me so many life experiences and people into my life that I'm forever grateful for. And yeah, so from what, age of 10, I just fell in love with basketball and I started playing like representative basketball, which is like different to the American system where they take high school basketball really serious. But like over in Australia, we take more of the representative outside of high school basketball, you know, more seriously. So I served, you know, my days on the bench. I had to go from div 3, you know, to div 4, to div 2 for a few years and, you know, just grinded it out. But yeah, 3 years later, I ended up getting picked for my first state team and did really well and, you know, played with some of the best around Australia and, got picked for my first Australian camp. I think so. That was like, I think maybe 3 or 4. It was 3 or 4 years after my first time playing basketball. So I was like 13 or 14 when I got picked for my first Oz camp. You know, I went to the development camp and then, you know, through juniors, they have your like development years. So they'll pick, you know, a certain amount a couple of years before you've got Worlds and they start preparing for Worlds. And I got called up to go to camp for Worlds and, that was pretty cool experience. I got picked to actually play in the under 17 world championship team, which was an amazing feeling. I was actually injured and missed out on the qualifying team, and that was devastating for me because, you know, I was so worried about, am I gonna get picked? Like, you know, I just got injured, now I gotta like, I guess, kind of get healthy and then be able to prove myself again. So all those type of emotions and, yeah, ended up getting to camp. And I actually had so originally back at that camp that I got injured, I actually injured my foot in 4x100. So it was a week before and I had a track meet. And I ended up breaking a little part of my foot when I was, like, running the back straight in our 4x100 relay. But it was so quick that, like, my adrenaline was going. I didn't feel it in the moment. And the race, I was, like, limping. I was like, oh, my gosh, what's wrong? And I didn't want to, like, think about it. I didn't even tell my mom about it. And it ended up going to Oz camp literally a week later with a broken foot. And the doc was like, yeah, like, you need to, you know, go get it looked at. And, you know, I just, again, I was like, no, it's not that bad. I'll be okay. Like, and I wasn't. It was literally worst case scenario. And Doc came back to me and was just like, so, yeah, you've broken your foot before. And I was like, no, I haven't. I've never broken my foot. And I was like, oh, wait, maybe that that moment in the race, like, I broke my foot. So ended up getting sent home from camp. It was devastating, and had to heal from that. But then I found out that I actually had the first layer of hip. I forget what it's called, but I had to have an arthroscopy on my left hip because the first layer of like the cartilage kind of came off, like literally like this. So my hip couldn't rotate all the way, and I couldn't get, you know, all that movement in my hip, which was obviously affecting me in every way on the court and then off the court as well, my recovery, all that type of stuff. So during my recovery from hurting my foot, I was like, okay, let's get the surgery. So I ended up getting the surgery, and I literally had, I think, 11 weeks until camp. And camp was like 5 full days, I think 5 or 6 full days of like 2-3 practices, go for a couple of hours and then recovery. I was in so much pain, like at camp, it's not funny. It was, if you really think about it, like I pushed my recovery and my rehab so much. You know, I was literally rehabbing and recovering like 3-4 times a day, every day for, you know, a good 10, 11 weeks. I was running at 8 weeks post-surgery, which is nuts to think. I really pushed my body and my mind. But I was just so locked in and focused on that goal that I knew what I needed to do to be able to just put myself out there, you know, again, because it was a huge opportunity, you know, getting picked for Worlds. So, yeah, went into camp and I was just in so much pain because, again, it's like 3 practices a day, you know, a couple hours a day, you know, you're just smashing your body and your mind. Yep. And I got picked at the end of the camp and I was bawling my eyes out. You know, to think that I went through all of those things, you know, then to be able to get to this point, getting picked, it, you know, was an amazing feeling. And going to Worlds and, you know, just playing for your country, there's no better feeling. Being able to play with some of the best in Australia and, you know, wear Australia across your chest, going to Worlds is very special to me. Playing against some of the girls who are in the WNBA right now, you know, who have done amazing things across their careers as women off the court as well. It's, you know, nothing beats experience. It was awesome. And yeah, that then led me on to college recruiting. I started my college recruiting in when I was in grade, I think in back end of grade 10.
I was just going to say, so just on that, all the rehab and the trials for Worlds, which was under 17s, how old were you, 15 or 16 around then?
So all the rehab and stuff, no, I was 16. I went to Worlds when I was 7. So in grade, actually it's funny, now you're like making me remember all this stuff. That happened when I was, so surgery was 16 and we went to Worlds when I was 17. I don't know, am I getting the dates right or wrong? Honestly, it was so long ago. I can't even remember. I was 16 or 17, but we went to Worlds when I was 17.
I was going to say, it's very young to be having hip surgery. Did you have to consult like a lot of people? Who did you consult with to make that decision? Because obviously at 16 to have hip surgery is probably a really big, big sort of question mark as whether you do it or not.
No, for sure. So, honestly, I'm so grateful and very blessed that I've had a great physio, Damien. I'm not even going to say his last name because I'd butcher it. But Damien, I actually met through the MPP program. So, you know, in every state in Australia, we have like a national performance program. Some of the best athletes you train and, you know, you know, just stay at, you know, peak performance and you get, you know, special things to be able to help you to be great. So I was blessed to be able to work with Damien, a physio that they had picked up through Results Physio in Chandler in Brisbane. And he has been my main physio since I was 13 years old. He has absolutely been so professional all the way through, his family to me. He has helped me heal from every injury. So he was really the reason, you know, that I trusted him and how he looked after me, how he's helped me in the past to get back on the floor from any niggle, keep me healthy. It was him and then his contact. So sports doctors, you know, we went through as well. To make sure that, you know, this was the right decision, you know, what is the potential time frame? Because, you know, you can only plan for so much, you know what I mean? And that's just the reality of life. Like, we have this plan, we hope it goes to this, but sometimes it just doesn't, you know? And you got to be able to just accept it and be able to move with it. And I was just very lucky that I had the professionalism from Damien being a physio and his knowledge and background to a great sports doc to then a great surgeon who did their jobs. And then I did mine, and that was the rehab and, yeah, just staying focused. But, yeah, very grateful for Damo. He's still in my life today. But, yeah.
And was that someone you would sort of rely on during your rehab? Did you keep them up to date with how you were feeling, like on a daily or weekly basis, like the amount of pain you were going through?
Yeah, check-ins, definitely. I'd say every other day. You know, I'd hit him up if I just felt a little bit more pain than usual, but it was rare. It was really interesting, actually, looking back on it, like, trying to rehab and push yourself, but not to the point where you might hurt yourself again. Find that happy medium is crazy, because it's like your hip is such a pivotal part of you being able to move and walk just in your daily life, bend over, sit, stand, you know. So, yeah, just being able to talk to Damo and adjust things and adjust them quickly. If something didn't work, then okay, let's go back to what was working. And, you know, yeah, it was always little tweaks here and there. But yeah, no, it was pivotal, staying in communication. I was seeing him maybe twice a week at that point. And when I was feeling a whole lot better and moving better, it was just like once a week. But yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, it's very important to have people. And even as you said, just sometimes to talk to, because especially being young with an injury, with, you know, such a big event coming up that you know, you feel like your life depends on it, that you have to make it. And having those injuries or concerns or doubts that you're not going to make it, it's important to be able to talk to people about that also.
No, 100%. I mean, if your mental's not right, nothing's going to be right. And, you know, having the support of, you know, professionals, and then also people who are human beings, you know, just are able to flick that switch with you, you know, and get on that level with you, it means a lot to you as an athlete. You know, we have our challenges mentally and physically, and just being able to navigate, you know, all of these things. I mean, you do it too in your everyday life, you know, not just being an athlete. You know, we're always navigating our feelings literally every day as humans, and it's a roller coaster, you know. But it's definitely important to, I think though, what I've learned from a lot of different experience from injuries and also to just things that have happened in life is like, you know, you've got to find your things that keep you grounded and you're able to pull yourself, you know, in when you need to, you know, not always having to rely on other people, you know. It's always good to have people there for you, but, you know, being able to pull yourself out of, you know, places where, you know, you don't feel your happiest or you're able to perform to your best, you know, it's empowering, and, you know, you feel that, you know, you have some sort of, like, I guess, what's the word for that? I don't even know. Well, it is empowering, just being able to do that, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, how, like, for yourself, diving a bit deeper into that, how do you manage that? And we'll get into it with your overseas part, because obviously a big part of that, going to a foreign country, not speaking the language, not, you know, being around people that you know, is obviously difficult. And sometimes you might feel down, you'll be homesick, you might have an injury and you're like, should I just go home? Like, how have you managed that over your sort of career and like that, keeping yourself motivated and uplifted as to why you're there and what you're chasing?
Yeah, that's such a great question. Yeah, look, I feel like speaking from my own experiences and being a professional basketball player, you are alone through a lot of things, right? You're always heading into the unknown. Every time that you sign a contract, you only know so much, you know, until you get there, everything feels so different and see so different, maybe in good ways and in maybe bad ways, you know what I mean? But it's just different when you're in it. Language barriers can definitely be tough. I think, though, one thing I've been surprised with, especially with some of the countries that I've been to, people do speak English. So you're able to communicate, you know, but I have, like, when I was in Saudi, that was tough. Like, a few of the girls could not speak English, you know, how I can speak English. I had to find ways to be able to communicate with them, which I think is cool because it's a challenge, you know, and being able to experience that in basketball, you know, every lesson is, you know, a blessing and an experience. So, you know, I just see it like that. But I think being, in a sense, it's kind of like you're being isolated, you know, when you're in another country and you're away from family and friends and from what you think is normal and from what you know. You get to the point where all you have is to be with your feelings and your emotions, and you have to actually face those things. Otherwise, your actions in your daily life are going to show you what's going on the inside. You know what I mean? Either way, you're going to experience that. So I think the fact that we spend so much time alone, we really try to dig deeper and find ourselves as human beings. When it comes to being, you know, professional basketball players, and what else are we outside of basketball too, you know? So I think, you know, because I feel like, look, social media and all these type of things can feel like it puts us in a different world, you know, when that actually doesn't exist, you know, but the whole world is always, right, like we're always on our phones. Yeah, you know, we're always on our phones and stuff like that. So, you know, that's being able to have that mentality of being able to block those things out of your life, but have your vices where it's like, for example, like I like to read, I like to do hot yoga, you know, I like to be in nature. I just like to do things that are calming, like for my spirit. And I guess these are the things that I truly value and that I feel that add value to my life and help me be a better person and a better athlete, you know, and better to the people around me. It's not just about being, I mean, when you're good to yourself, you're going to be good to the people around you. You know what I mean? So, yeah, like.
It's interesting. You picked two out of the three things I was going to ask you. I was going to say, in those moments, like, do you do things like read a lot of books or listen to podcasts or do yoga or some sort of meditation? But because I thought that might be something that would be helpful. It's like when you're always alone, is can you read? And whether it's self-improvement or just dealing with mental challenges, or is it yoga just to get good breathing and just, as you say, sort of center yourself and just clear your mind a little bit?
Yeah, no, 100%. So, like, honestly, hot yoga changed. Like, it made such an impact on my life, honestly. Like, I'd say it really did change my life in so many ways because it took my game to a whole other level. But not, I mean, again, like, you can't take your game to the next level unless you take your mindset to a next level. Like, and that comes with healing and being able to slow things down. Like, and so hot yoga literally forces you to be present. Like, you have no choice but to be present. If you're not present, you literally cannot hold the poses that the yoga instructor is asking you to do, because your breath has so much to do with how you literally hold yourself and how you think and how you feel and how you do. And that's why, you know, people don't understand, you know, how important it is when, like, you know, a paramedic or a parent or whoever says, just take deep breaths. Like, you know, anyone tells you to take deep breaths for a reason, right? Yeah. So in hot yoga, you know, you are forced to be present. Nothing else exists. You are, for me, like, to focus when I do hot yoga, I take deep breaths. I'm focusing on my breathing because I feel like I have a sense of, like, control, but not. Like, I'm so calm in my position that I'm able to hold it. And, like, for example, you get to this point. So, like, I'd say you hold positions for, like, nearly a minute, maybe some longer or maybe some shorter, but you get to a point, right? Even, for example, when you lift weights, right, you're like, oh, my gosh, I don't know if I can get through this rep right now. You get to that point. It's like that in hot yoga, but when you breathe through it, it does not feel as bad as, you know, it does when you stress about it. And that is then able, if you're able to use that in life, like, say if you're having a moment where you feel like you're just going to, you know, have a cry or whatever, see if you can just take deep breaths and bring yourself to that, you know. I'm going to say it's hard, though. It's hard being able to transition to having that much discipline in your daily life to be able to, you know, okay, just take deep breaths. I'm not going to swear at this right now. I'm not going to, you know what I mean? Like, it's little things like, I'm not going to have road rage right now. Like,
I've got four children, so I definitely know that feeling.
You know, so, that's what yoga's done for me. I would say, and it's funny, like, I would say, I know I'm not, you know, in the right space when I'm not doing those things, you know, because those are my things that I know that I do when I am focused and I am also relaxed and I am present. You know what I mean? Definitely, I'd say gratitude is a big thing for me. I'm always giving thanks to the world. I'm a big believer in, you know, all the energy that you put out to the world is going to come back to you, and everything happens for a reason. I'm also big on my faith too. I would say reading, yoga, just being in nature, and yeah, those are my things. Yeah.
Really. And have you found, like, as you said there, when you do those things and they're sort of, you know, I guess in balance, or you've got the discipline and that's in your life, that your performance on the court is better?
100%. And I'm speaking because on that and 100% about it, because I've seen the change from when I changed, you know, things I was doing in my daily life, even away from basketball, for my mindset. I was able to enjoy the game more, and I was able to be better in my role and do my job on the floor, but then also to be a better teammate, be a better leader. And that's something that I embody and really want to be this season for my team here at Nunawading, is to grow in that role of being able to be so present in the game that you're able to help your teammates out even more, you know, help yourself, take liberty first always. But when you see things happen on the floor, call it out, you know, be like, hey, if you do this, blah, blah, then this is going to happen. Hey, I need you to get to the rim. You know, yeah. She can't guard you or whatever, you know what I mean? So,
not panicking, like, yeah, feeling confident in what's going on.
Exactly. And you know what, one thing that I've really learned, so I've always been a big, right? So I see the floor because I'm at the back of everything. Yeah. And so one thing that I truly realized that in stepping in my role of being more vocal is the more present I am on the floor, the more feedback I'm able to give my teammates for us to be able to do better. Mm. And that will then hopefully lead to a win. And yeah. I told myself, I see things, but I wouldn't say them. I wouldn't say everything. Like, I'd say some things, but I wouldn't say everything. And I feel like that was a bit of a, I don't want to feel like I'm over talking or make them feel like I'm trying to be, you know, almighty or whatever you want to call it, you know what I mean? But it's really like, I do see this. Let me just say it. And if we can agree or not, it's okay. Like, we'll do whatever we feel is best on the floor and we'll go back and look on it after the game. You know what I mean? That's cool. But I told myself that I had to say what I saw. And so I've been doing that more. And can you hear me?
Is that something that's come with age and experience as well, do you think? Because I found when I used to play, I'd be very quiet when I was younger, but as I got older, I'd talk a lot more, because I think you've played that many games of sport or whatever sport you play that you just feel a lot more confident, and you've seen this before, you know, I've seen this play out.
100%. When I started to build my voice and my confidence, when I won my first rep in, but also I would say when I started to play for Australia too, so I got that from showing my teammates that I put in the work. So that's, you know what I mean? And the ball goes in the hoop and I am a good teammate, you know, and I do play both ends of the floor. So I had that respect from my teammates, you know. So then I felt like I had the confidence also to show, hey, this is what's going on the floor, being able to communicate with my teammates. Yes, of course, experience is absolutely huge. And I think one thing that I didn't realize about my experience, like in Saudi Arabia, this past year, that I realized when I got home, was that I might have been in such a, because I was the only import, there's only one import on every team in the women's league in Saudi Arabia. So I was put in a situation where it was like I'm scoring on three people. And it, like, I would literally get yelled at. If my teammate was open, I'd pass it to a shrine in the basket, I'd get yelled at. It was so interesting to me because I'm not used to that.
Yeah.
But looking back on that, you know, it then shows, okay, when I was in Saudi, I was trying to lead so much, but I was trying to, my coach was trying to put me in a position where he wanted me to score. That was my job, you know, that's what I was brought to do. And then so now I've been able to, you know, come back here to the NBL One and, you know, just be able to be more of a voice to my team. And I can see, like, the change and the impact that I do have on my teammates. Like, even if I'm not putting the ball in the hoop, like, I'm going to be that voice because I know I'm the loudest person on the floor. I'm always the loudest person on the floor. And if I go quiet, that means that I'm not present right now. And it's a good and a bad thing because my coach and my teammates know, like, Brian, you're quiet right now. Like, it's like, oh, I'm caught out, aren't I? So, but But yeah, no, definitely having that experience, it helps a lot. I mean, you're put in so many different team situations, right? English, can they speak English well? I can't speak their language. I'm the foreigner. You know what I mean? So, and then skill sets as well. You know, it's, you have to be able to adjust to so many different, you know, into every different team that you get into.
And
I think that's,
I was going to say then, so going back, how did your, and we'll go through them all, but how did your overseas experience start? Was it through the US college system?
Yeah, so I was recruited, like I was saying, from like the end of grade 10 to go to into Division I schools. And it came up to like, honestly, like it was a month or two. Sorry about this bird. No, just trying to get him on the podcast. But yeah, it was like a month or two before official signing date, because you know there's cutoff dates that you have to sign before to go to schools. I found out that I actually wasn't eligible for D1s. I had missed like a whole class, and I can't even remember now. It was so long ago now, thinking about it. But I had missed so much of like grade 12 that there was a whole class that I needed to actually qualify for D1. And when I tell you, like, I was gutted, like I was heartbroken. I cried for like 2 weeks because I'm like, where am I going now? And then people are like, oh, you've got to go JUCO. And I'm like, what the heck is JUCO? I'm over here like, I had my dream set on D1 like for how many years? I'm broken. So I was a mess for like 2 weeks, and then I just accepted my fate. I was like, okay, we're going JUCO. It is what it is. So
was that, were you missing, as you said, with the class, was that through bar commitments that you missed so much school?
Yeah, so grade 12, honestly, like I missed like 2 to like 3 months of like high school, I mean of like the 12th grade, but not consecutively. Like I'm talking about those days together. Like I was playing in so many state teams for school, you know, team outside of school, reps, and then like I was traveling out the country, you know, and of course I had my days when I was tired. So my mom was like, you're not going to school, you're sleeping. Like it was what it was, you know.
So going back to that, was there, who was advising you around that stuff? Did someone not pick that up a little bit sooner to sort of not allow honestly, that to happen?
Yeah, honestly, I didn't have that much guidance from people who had experience around me. It was, I guess, a family friend who kind of came in and was just like, hey, let's look at some of these different things. Let's research. So yeah, I had the help of them, and it was what it was, though. You know, we went JUCO. Yeah.
It's very different. That's it. It's very different now. Now there's like hundreds of, you know, US college businesses out there that help you and no doubt tick all those boxes off before you go. But I'm guessing, you know, back when you were doing it, that probably wasn't available.
Yeah, no, it wasn't really out there. And I wasn't out there searching for it. I mean, I think that's one thing, too, that, you know, back around my age group, people probably miss out on opportunities and stuff where they really could have gone and played college basketball because they just didn't think of these things to, what do I research? Like, you know, we don't know. We're a whole world away. You know what I mean? It was just that time, like, social media wasn't really all that. You know what I mean? Everybody was on it, you know?
Yeah.
But now, you know, everybody's on it. You know, you can't really miss anything. You'll hear from someone.
And how did you find the US experience?
It was a journey. JUCO was a very humbling experience. I would never change anything about my college journey because it's made me who I am, and you know, it's helped shape my career and my mentality, you know, on and off the floor. It's brought me amazing experiences and friendships. I went to Northwest Florida State my first year. That was a tough experience. We just didn't gel well the first year, but we had the talent, and I think that's what hurts the most. Me being someone who has won a lot of championships growing up, I know a winning team. I know a winning culture. I know what we have to do. I know how we have to treat each other, you know. I know the dynamic and the work ethic. And that first year, I was just like, we have all the talent, but people are just selfish, you know, the way that they treat their teammates and the way that they go about practice. And that's what hurt us in the end. We lost and didn't get an opportunity to championship because of people's egos, you know, people being selfish. So that was a tough part of college that I experienced and I didn't like. I went to Hutchinson the next year with one of my good friends, Tiana. And that was the best college experience I ever had at that school. We were in the middle of nowhere in Kansas, and you'd think it'd be super boring, but, you know, we didn't realize in those moments, like, we were creating memories and friendships for life. Like, still to this day, me and that team have the same group chat. We talk to each other. We check in on each other. We go to each other's weddings. Mm-hmm. We won a championship. We won a Region 7 conference championship. That was an amazing feeling. And being ranked number 1 to 10, you know, in your career, and being able to say you went to play in a national championship, it's a different feeling, you know. Not everybody gets to say that. And I was very grateful for that experience. And our coaches, I mean, they just won the national. They just won the conference championship, and they just won the national championship this year. And it's with the same coaches that we had. And, you know, they're a winning culture for a reason. They're amazing people. First of all, before even coaches, you can't be great at what you do if you're not a good person. And they're amazing people, and they took care of us like we were their own daughters, and on and off the floor. And, you know, they were hard on us on the floor. They didn't let anything slide. And we were just such a disciplined team who loved each other, and we worked hard for each other and sacrificed for each other, and we were able to win. And to them, like, so much credit to them, because it brought me those experiences. But also too, like, I didn't realize, like, I was so locked in that I ended up graduating number one post player in the nation that year, my sophomore year. Had no idea, like, because I was just so locked in, like, that was our environment, you know. It wasn't pride and ego stuff, you know. I wasn't even looking at that until, like, towards getting recruited. I was like, whoa, like, I'm getting big schools. And I was very grateful that I was getting big schools, and it was because of them and the opportunity that they gave me and the work that we put in. So, and then I ended up, going to Iowa State after that, to the Big 12.
I was going to say, just from those two different stories you've said, like, what stands out straight away, and you said it as well, is you noted a difference in culture. So just say the Hutchison one, if you had those people at the first school with the right high standards because you had the ability there, you've seen both, so you know what works and what doesn't work. And can you now identify that very quickly, given that experience?
No, 100%. I mean, it's crazy to think, right, that I was still playing Division I JUCO, just switch schools, switch conferences, and just because we had, you know, a culture, we had standards, you know, we had expectations, you know, we had people who kept us accountable. Our coaches, you know, made it, you know, first priority, though, that, you know, they take care of us as people. You know, they knew the importance of that, and they always took care of us first. And then, you know, that built those, you know, individual and group relationships with us, for, you know, them to have our trust, you know, to trust each other, to work hard for each other, you know, to be able to held accountable, and, you know, coach snap on you and, you know, take it personally. You know, that's what needed to be done because you need to be better, you know. So, yeah, relationships was just huge. And I mean, I knew that, though, and that's what made my first year uncle, because it's just like, but it was good for me because I had to learn to be able to find peace in situations I couldn't control. I had to control what I could control, which is my energy and effort and being a good teammate, you know, do my recovery, rehab, all those types of things, take care of myself and let whatever was out of my control be. But that's what I did struggle with, was just being around those. I wasn't used to being around standards and expectations not being met. You know what I mean? I'm used to being in good cultures like that.
And that's where I guess your, like, your self-discipline has to come into it. As you say, you need to still do the right thing day after day after day, no matter what's happening around you. Because, you know, I say this quite a lot, but even though they're team sports, like, there is that individual pursuit within it, because you need to keep yourself at a high standard and keep yourself injury-free and ready to play.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right.
So from there, you went on to Iowa State?
Yeah, I went to Iowa State. It was freezing. At least Kansas, like, gave me a little warm up going to Iowa, but Iowa was just next level, like, snowing and ice. Like, I never just experienced, because I'm from Queensland, it's a sunshine state, it's like Florida. And so just ice everywhere. Like, we could drive, like, faster than 10 kilometers an hour. It was just nuts. The cold, it was nuts. It was snowing. I fell over a lot. I was wearing boots. It was just nuts. No, but playing in the Big 12 is definitely an amazing experience. I didn't realize how good of a program I was in until, you know, I had left and, situation I was in. But man, it was awesome to play just with high level, athletes. And, I played with players who, are now in the WNBA and played against them. And, I told myself my goal was to always play, be able to play against the best of the best. And that's always what my goals are, because I know it's also going to help me be the best player that I can be. And help me to be able to do other things, in life, be able to inspire others as well. Yeah, playing in Big 12 was second to none. Being able to meet pretty cool people on and off the floor, just the experiences were awesome. Being able to play in the Big 12 tournament, yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah.
And is that something like I highly recommend the US college system, no matter what sport? Like you've been through it, I haven't been through it, but I think from one an experience point of view, as you say, like different cultures, different weather conditions, which can bring your mood down, to be honest. Have you just cut surrounded
Yeah.
by snow and ice all the time? It's depressing. But also just networking, who you meet and how that might help you later on in life. You just never know who you might meet, what might come with it at some point.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. That's one thing that, like, honestly, it might be like the one of the biggest things that basketball has taught me in my career so far is like, every place and every different environment that I get to experience, I'm always going to meet different people, and you just never know who you're going to meet, who you're going to connect with, where you might see each other again in life. And that's what I'm so grateful for. Like, I've got players here now in Australia who are playing, who I met and played with in Africa. Like, it's pretty cool how this stuff goes, and just being able to be like, hey, I'm coming to, Chicago. Hey, I'm going to Australia. Can I come stay with you? Like, it's just, it's a blessing for sure, and very grateful, for all the experiences and what basketball, has and is doing for me. But yeah, connections is huge, and you're always meeting different people from different walks of life. It's awesome.
And what then was your, what would you say was your first big like overseas experience after you come out of the US college system, because you've played in several countries. Can you let us know what countries you've played in and sort of how, like I'm interested firstly in Saudi Arabia, because it just doesn't sound like it's not somewhere you would think, that a woman would go to play sports, because but no doubt that was a challenge, a lot of experience. But yeah, if you give us a bit of an idea as to where you've played and more interestingly, like how these opportunities come around.
Yeah, so I've had an interesting pro journey so far in my 4 years. I feel like I've been playing way longer than that with what I've experienced so far. So I came out of college thinking that, oh yeah, I'll just get an agent and I'll be all good, be able to sign contracts and play basketball, do what I love, fly to different countries. Sunshine rainbows. It's not like the way that I found out. So yeah, I had, just signed with this agent who I'd been talking with online and then on the phone. I didn't really understand or know to ask a bunch of questions about who he was. And, I asked the basics, but, didn't go into, the deep questions and didn't think about, okay, who is he representing and all that type of stuff. I just had no clue. You don't know what you don't know. So, and I didn't have anyone actually helping me. So I was doing this myself. So I signed with him, he signed me to Egypt. I had no clue about Egypt. That was probably bad on my behalf for not even researching, but I'm trusting in my agent, thinking, oh, I'll be okay, I'll be taken care of. It's funny because I actually didn't plan on playing like professionally after NBL one. Like, I was just gonna like chill, like take the season off and just like work. But it's just funny how it all happened because he messaged me and I was like, okay, why not? Anyway, so then signed with him, went to Egypt, and going to Egypt, like, I didn't even know Egypt was in Africa. I don't know if a lot of people actually know that, but I didn't know that. And so I was like, well, I'm in Africa, that's crazy. And then so that was my, it's a Muslim country. And I think, a lot of people have a misconstrued understanding of, what Muslim religion is and Islam and who can, practice being a Muslim, which is anybody and everybody. But I was actually familiar with the Muslim religion, so I didn't actually feel uncomfortable when I went there. My auntie is actually Muslim, and she actually, helped raise me a little bit growing up. She was Indian, so it's pretty cool how she's Indian from India, but practices being a Muslim. So when she looked after me, like I would pray with her and all those types of things. So I was actually quite familiar with, you know, Islam. When I went to Egypt, I think the first thing that just caught me off guard was the fact there wasn't a lot of women. Like, I was like, there's just men everywhere. And, like, it was kind of like spot the woman in the crowd. And I was like, this is interesting. Like, I didn't know what to expect. I went in there blind.
I was just going to say, so just before you get into that, so what did he present to you as to say, all right, I've got you a deal. It's in Egypt. Like, what were the terms that I guess they told you, where you were going, how much money you were getting, what were they like?
Yeah, so, you know, it was a couple of thousand a month, which is like the kind of like the normal. Well, honestly, that's a blessed salary for women who just start out their first year because for especially us as females, like, you can get contracts as low as like 700, 800, like being in Europe, you know what I mean? Not to say that some males don't, but it's just more like common for females. Yeah. It was a couple thousand. And then they said, you know, they cover your hotel and, you know, any medical stuff. You know, they say you have a driver, interpreter, we'll give you Wi-Fi and SIM cards. So portable, like maybe portable Wi-Fi because the connection might not be good. They give you SIM cards. They say they give you meals, depending, like, all contracts are going to differ, but this was mine, that I would be taken care of on every road trip. They pay for your return flights, you know, there and back. Depending, you might be paid in cash or paid by a bank. And that sort of, like, already red flagged me. I was like, paid in cash? And I'm like, okay, seeing, like, we're getting paid in cash.
Brown paper bag stuff, so great. Yeah.
Can I do this? Yeah. I was like, can I do this? Can I bring this home? I don't even know, like. But, yeah, so just little funny things. And then. So, yeah, but, yeah, that was the contract side of things. That stuff was covered.
And did that actually happen? All the things you were sort of promised, did you get them?
So I played, like, 2-3 games, and I was like, hey, you guys have made my first payment. And they were like, oh, don't worry, we'll get the money to you. And I was like, no, this was the date. You know, my agent was also pushing for it because that's his job. Like, you go to your agent first. Like, you shouldn't have to do that, right? So, you know, agent was pushing that. And I just, you know, got to the point where it was a 6-game in and I was like, I'm not playing. I'm not coming to practice. Mm. Like, you need to pay me. Like, this is not fair. I get paid to do this and play for you guys and put my health and well-being on the line for you. I'm supposed to be paid you my money. And I sat out and it was just so funny because the money was literally in my hand within the next 24 hours. Right. So I was like, wow, I literally had to do all of that just to get my money. It's ridiculous. But, you know, I'm lucky in that sense because I know people who have like played whole seasons and never seen a dollar. It gets like that, which is crazy to think. But the things that you would never think would ever happen happens in Pro Bowl, men and women. It's quite crazy.
It's the same in football, like through Europe, and you know, people might go to Romania or you know, all these different countries, and they get promised A, B, and C, and they don't see any of it, or they might see a little bit, or they haven't been paid after a month, and they come home, and yeah, that's why you just got to be so careful, don't you? And that's why, like, I like doing interviews like this to make other people aware of just be careful, you know, check your contracts, know who your agents are, know the clubs you're going to, all the things you've learned probably the hard way.
No, I literally learned all the important things the hard way. Yeah. But, I mean, I'm grateful that, honestly, I learned it early in my career because I would have liked to have learned it, you know, later down the track. But I think, the most important things are make sure you, like, when it comes to an agent, get someone who's credible, who actually has, like, a lot of, I think, a few years on them with athletes. You want to see that, you know what I mean? Okay, they've been getting them jobs. They've been doing their job. You know what I mean? Like, go hit up athletes. Talk to other athletes. Awesome. You know, don't be scared to talk to people. You know, that's how people get jobs. You know, us athletes having each other's backs, you know what I mean? You build relationships with people. You go, we need a point guard. Cool. I'm going to get what's the name that I played with or I met in blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? Yeah. So doing your own research is so important in talking to people. And then
I was going to say, do you talk and ask the other players? Like, you've been at national team level and stuff. So do you go, all right, I need an agent. Who do you guys recommend? Or I need a financial planner or I need, you know, some help in this area.
No, exactly right. Like, it's so important to make sure you ask those people around you. And I'm sure, like, you know, more than half of the athletes are willing to help each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just so important to, yeah, do your own research and talk to people. You got to talk to people because, it can get crazy.
And how did your time in Egypt end up? How long did you end up playing there?
So I actually ended up getting a grade 2 sprain to my LCL, my PCL in my right knee because we were playing on tennis courts. And that was another thing that I was not happy about that I had no idea about until I got to like practice and stuff like that. So they were cemented courts and then some of them were outside. And I just wasn't expecting any of these conditions. But I still, was like, okay, I'll still stay and play. And this one game, I just went and got a rebound. And when I landed, it was just so quick. I can't even explain like how it happened, but grade 2 to my, right LCL and PCL. And I tried to run it off, couldn't run it off and got MRIs and stuff. And that was the one thing that I was nervous about was if I was to, get injured, how was I going to be taken care of? Because in Egypt, they just weren't professional. Like nothing was ever done on time. Nothing was on time. Like practice wasn't on time. Nothing was ever on time. They'd be like, this is happening then. I'm like, no, it's not, but I'll be there, but no, it's not. So I was just worried about, how they're going to take care of me. And so I made sure I went and got scans and stuff. And then I sent it back to my sports doc and my physio back home. And they were both just like, look, you got bone bruising, which might take longer than the grade 2 sprain to the LCL and the PCL. And then you've got these sprains, grade 3, they're gone. Mm-hmm. So I was like, yeah, okay, I'm coming home. So after about 3 weeks, I actually waited to get paid because they owed me money and I didn't want to leave. So it was one of those tough situations where it was like, great, I'm injured. I do really need to get home and start healing this injury, but I want my money. So I waited a few weeks and they gave me my money and then I flew home.
In that time, did they provide you like with rehabilitation or with physio or medical?
They provided me with a physio, but I had to pay. And then what else? Yeah, that was it.
Mm. Yeah, and did you have to go to them to get out of your contract, or did you speak to your agent and just say, I need to go home, and they just sort of cancelled it?
I had actually fired my agent. Oh. So yeah, I got rid of the contract. So through talking with people, I was able to learn how to get out of my contract, and I put my termination, contract together, sent it to my agent and to the team, communicated and got myself out of that. So that was a huge learning curve for me. My first overseas contract, and it was wild at the time, but I'm grateful for it because I've learned from that experience with an agent what to do, and then reading contracts. Now I've learned so much up to date. I'm still learning because contracts are very tedious, the way that they need to be worded and the things that you want and don't want in there. It's a lot. It's a lot, but I definitely do encourage athletes to make sure you learn how to read contracts and know what you need as an athlete, and make sure you demand those things, and everything has to be in writing, and it's not in writing, it doesn't.
And does like Australian basketball have like a players association where you can sort of get that help from, or do you have to source it yourself?
Yeah, so do you mean like in regards to if we get into a situation overseas?
Yeah, so for instance, in football, you've got the PFA or Professional Football Association, and any sort of questions you have, if you're a member of them, you can reach out to them. They'll look over your contracts. They'll try and speak to the club on your behalf. They'll help you with agents, sort of, just like a union type thing, but for the players.
Like an advisor type thing, yeah. No, that would be next level if they had something like that. That's really right now where it's the agent's jobs for us, to do that. Otherwise, go to a sports lawyer, but that's a lot of money. So, yeah, we don't really have that. And that's where I'm saying, and I tell people all the time, I'm like, you need to learn how to read your contracts and know what you want and need in your contracts. It's got to be in there. It's got to be in there because you can't be mad about something that's not in writing.
And what type of things, just from your own experience, what type of things should people be, outside of obviously money, which is the main one for your wages, but are there any things that you obviously missed from the first couple that you've done that now you definitely have in there?
I think, maybe having clauses where it's like, if you don't, pay me by the due date, I'm allowed to terminate this contract with whatever payout, blah, blah, or none or whatever, right? whatever you want. I think that's very important, because what if you're also in a situation, you know, where it's bad, like, you know, extremely unprofessional, and, you know, that can happen. Like, you know, maybe the agent, you know, he's had that relationship, or she has had that relationship with this team. It's all been great for years, and maybe something just happens, you know, because things happen, you know, where it's coach or players, whatever, and it doesn't work out. You want to be able to get out of there. So I think, you know, maybe having those clauses, that's important. And just making sure, I guess, all your living arrangements are just top notch. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you're either living by yourself, you know, you've got your washer, your dryer, or, you know, they're paying for you to dry your clothes, or they're giving you, just extra money to pay for you to go to the dryer. You know what I mean? If there's no dryer, just things like that really do add up. Even just having a portable Wi-Fi, give me a SIM card, give me $100 a credit a month, or whatever, you know, for my phone. Like, you really want every covered. You don't want to have any extra bills, because we're working this job to pay for our bills, by phone, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, no, it's very important. And that's why I like to sort of dive a little bit into it. It might sound basic, but it is important, you know, just things like being able to have somewhere to wash and dry your clothes, because, you know, you need them. You're in a foreign country. It's not like you can go to mum's house and, you know, she's going to do it for you. You're over somewhere by yourself. So, no, it's very, very important. No, it's interesting, though. And, again, the whole agent part of having someone that you can trust and work with that you feel has your best interests at heart and can look out for these little things for you are key.
No, yeah, they really are. Like, they can, honestly, it can really make or break your career. I mean, how many athletes can you say come out of college or whatever situation they're in and go, oh, yeah, I've just got all the connections to go to all these teams and build myself a resume? Not really any of us can say we can do that. So agents really do have a huge impact on our careers, in the sense of connections are so important. And then, you know, obviously us turning up and being pros is then the next part, because, you know, an agent has the contacts, but then it's on us as athletes to actually do our jobs. Like, you have to be a great teammate and, you know, do your job, you know, whether that's rebounding, scoring, or being a PG, whatever it is, you know, do your job, do it well, have the stats in the field for yourself for your next contract. It's always about the next, you know? And I guess, from my experience, it can really make or break your career.
Can it be, as you were just saying there, only because I had this same conversation with someone today on how cutthroat it can be, if you're in a foreign country as a foreigner, whether you're an Aussie or American or New Zealander, and you're brought in to be scoring, just say, you know, they want you scoring or they want you rebounding, if you're not doing that within the first couple of weeks, do you feel like, or have you ever seen people just, their contracts are torn up and they'll bring in someone else?
Yeah, I've seen it. And I've heard of it. It happens. And the crazy part is that, like, I've heard of even, like, one of my friends, the club didn't speak to her for, like, 2 weeks, and she was literally in her room for 2 weeks, and then they were just, like, terminating the contract. She was, you know, she was already uncomfortable and didn't like where she was. But it's the fact of the matter, for 2 weeks, nobody spoke to her. You know what I mean? Like, that's crazy to feel like you're in a non-English speaking away from home, no one's speaking to you, you know. The agent can only do so much, because they're a whole world away as well, on different time zones, you know what I mean? And again, you know, not every agent, it's not their fault when things happen, you know what I mean? Like, it's not always the agent's fault, you know. Things just happen. But
a lot of things you got to be aware of. I mean, having, and we'll touch on your next move now. I won't keep you too much longer, because, you know, we could probably talk for hours, I would imagine.
Definitely.
But going into, you know, to that, it is such a cool experience to go and play in overseas countries, learn new cultures, learn a new language potentially, and just have that different experience. But it does come with a lot of risk, a lot of loneliness, a lot of potential unknowns. So what else have you found, like, touching on the Saudi one, how did the Saudi move come up, and how did you navigate that one?
Yeah, so one of my good friends that I actually met playing professionally, Mo Reed, she played for that team and won a championship with them the year before. She was like, yeah, come play for them. They're actually like having their first year as a league in Saudi Arabia. I'm not sure if a lot of people are knowledgeable about Saudi Arabia, but the development of, you know, women's rights and women being able to do things, you know, and play sport has only been just evolving. Yeah. And this year was the first year that they actually had a league. And, they are, like I told you, we only had one import to every team. That was the rule. So the league was only like 2 months though. So it wasn't even long how we would think a league would be, which is what, like five months plus is a league, right? That we would think. But they made a 2 month league and I played in that. And yeah, it was definitely an interesting experience in the sense of the way that they coach over there. They yell a lot. There's a lot of yelling, but the women were absolutely beautiful. They absolutely love basketball over there. I just wish that they had more opportunities, you know, like we do in, you know, places like Australia and America and other countries. They don't have the opportunities that we get, but they're very passionate about it and they absolutely love basketball. But yeah, playing in Saudi itself and experiencing the country was pretty cool though. It was.
Yeah. And how did you get in touch with the club to negotiate? Did you negotiate your own contract on this one?
No, it was my agent, so he negotiated that.
And did you find this time, just from experience from the Egypt trip, that this one went a lot better? You knew what to ask him for, and was it delivered upon?
Yeah. You know, I think it was. Maybe to the back end, things happen to the back end. I ended up actually getting a little calf tear in my calf, my left calf, and I couldn't play in the tournament in Dubai. So it was my second time at the Arab Women's Championship, and I got injured. And, you know, clubs don't like that when you get injured. They don't, you know, want you to be injured. So, you know, it was kind of an uncomfortable situation. It was like, okay, they know I'm not healthy, but they want me to play. I'm like, I know I can't play. So, you know, I sent the scans back to my docs here again, and they were like, yeah, this is a 2 week injury minimum. And so they're like, you need a rest. And they wanted me to play, but they're like, no, don't do it. So I was like, okay, like I'm going to not do it. So didn't do it. And they didn't like that. And ended up coming to, you know, mutual agreement to end my contract to come home, because I need to be healthy. That's the number one thing. And I had NBL 1 coming up. So I was just like, with the time frame that I have right now, from the back end of this, you know, which is going to be like 2 or 3 more weeks, and then I would go straight into NBL 1. I've got to be healthy for NBL 1. So I was like, I got to go home and get healthy. So I was okay with that.
Yeah. I guess it's one of those things, isn't it? You have to make that decision. But
yeah,
knowing that there's other opportunities out there, sometimes you have to cut one short to like that. As you say, make sure you're healthy so you can take up another one. It's never the be all and end all, is it? Yeah,
exactly right. Exactly right.
Well, look, it's getting on to an hour, so I'll let it on. But if there's any other advice you'd like to give to, like, you know, that want to play basketball and potentially play overseas, is what would it be from your own experiences?
Definitely do not be afraid to talk to people. Talk to current professional athletes, ex-athletes. Talk to, you know, message as many agents as you feel could help you. Do your own research, you know, look for the credibility in the sense of, you know, the relationships. But again, like, if you can't find that online, go and hit athletes up. Yeah, just do a bunch of research when it comes to your agents. And
do you find, like, through the opportunities or agents you're looking for, or even to find these people, what's the best platform have you found, like LinkedIn or Instagram, or where do you find most people that you're trying to reach out to?
You know, it was funny, the way that I was looking for agents, I was actually just looking at the top athletes, and I was just going down from there, seeing who their agents were. And then I would just ask some of my friends who are already pros, hey, who's your agent and who knows who? And it's literally, you just got to ask, you got to talk to people. That's how you're going to be able to find people's names.
I would imagine it's quite a small pool. Once you start digging into it, you probably see the same couple of names come up over and over. And then I guess, you know, they're the top end of what you want to talk to. Yeah,
100%. Yeah, it definitely is that. And I feel like it becomes a small world when you play professionally. Like everyone knows somebody.
Exactly. Well, Bridie, I really appreciate your time. It's some fantastic stories and insights there. It's amazing. And best of luck with the rest of your season there in Melbourne.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. It was awesome speaking to you.
No worries.